great blend of history and supposition and mystery, all of which appealed to me. I was hooked.
How about frat parties?
Not my thing.
Football games?
No.
Did you ever think you missed out on what college was supposed to be?
No.
Me neither, she agreed. Not once I had been, anyway.
He nodded, then gestured toward the woods. Do you think we should have Zeus find Ben now?
Oh, my gosh, she cried, her tone slightly panicked.
Yes, he can find him, right? How long has it been?
Not long. 5 minutes, maybe. Let me get Zeus. And don't worry, it won't take long.
Logan went to the door and opened it. Zeus trotted out, tail wagging, then wandered down the stairs. He immediately lifted a leg by the side of the porch, then trotted back up the stairs to Logan.
Where's Ben?
Logan asked. Zeus's ears rose. Logan pointed in the direction Ben had gone.
Find Ben.
Zeus turned and started trotting in wide arcs, nose to the ground. Within seconds, he picked up the trail and he vanished into the darkness.
Should we follow him?
Beth asked. Do you want to?
Yes.
Then let's go. They'd barely reached the first of the trees when she heard Zeus emit a playful bark. Right after that, Ben's voice sounded in a squeal of delight. When she turned toward Logan, he shrugged.
You weren't lying, were you? She asked. What was that? 2 minutes?
It wasn't hard for him. I knew Ben wouldn't be too far away.
What's the longest he's ever tracked something?
He followed a deer trail for, I don't know, 8 miles or so. Something like that, anyway. He could have gone on, too, but it ended at someone's fence. That was in Tennessee.
Why did you track the deer?
Practice. He's a smart dog. He likes to learn, and he likes to use his skills. At that moment, Zeus came padding out of the trees, Ben a step behind him, which is why this is just as much fun for him as it is for Ben.
That was amazing, Ben called out. He just walked right up to me. I wasn't making a sound.
You want to do it again? Logan asked.
Can I?
Ben pleaded. If it's okay with your mom. Ben turned to his mother, and she raised her hands.
Go ahead. Okay, put him inside again. And I'm really going to hide this time,
Ben declared. You got it, Logan said. The second time Ben hid, Zeus found him in a tree. The third time, with Ben retracing his steps in an attempt to throw him off, Zeus found him a quarter mile away, in his treehouse by the creek. Beth wasn't thrilled with his final choice. The unstable bridge and platform always seemed far more dangerous at night. But by then, Ben was getting tired and ready to call it quits anyway. Logan followed them back to the house. After saying goodnight to an exhausted Ben, he turned to Beth and cleared his throat. I want to thank you for a great evening, but I should probably be heading home, he said. Despite the fact that it was close to 10 o'clock, part of her didn't want him to go just yet.
Do you need a ride?
She offered.
Ben will be asleep in a couple of minutes, and I'd be glad to bring you home.
I appreciate the offer, but we'll be fine. I like to walk.
I know. I don't know much about you, but I do know that. She smiled.
I'll see you tomorrow, right? I'll be here at 7.
I can feed the dogs if you'd rather come in a bit later.
It's no problem. And besides, I'd like to see Ben before he leaves. And I'm sure Zeus will, too. Poor guy probably won't know what to do without Ben chasing him.
All right, then.
She hugged her arms, suddenly disappointed at the thought of Logan's departure. Would it be okay if I borrowed the truck tomorrow? I need to run into town to get a few things to fix the brakes.
No problem. I have to drop Ben off and run some errands. But if I don't see you, I'll just put the keys under the mat on the driver's side.
Fine, he said. He looked directly at her. Good night, Elizabeth.
Good night, Logan.
Once he was gone, Beth checked on Ben and gave him another kiss on the cheek before going to her room. She replayed the evening as she undressed, musing on the mystery of Logan Tebow. He was different from any man she'd ever met, she thought, and then immediately chided herself for being so obvious.
Of course he was different, she told herself. He was new to her. She'd never spent much time with him before. Even so, she reasoned she was mature enough to recognize the truth when she saw it. Logan was different. Lord knows Keith wasn't anything like him. Nor, in fact, was anyone else she'd dated since the divorce. Most of the men had been fairly easy to read. No matter how polite and charming or rough and unrefined they might be, everything they did seemed like transparent efforts at getting her into bed. Man crap, as Nana described it. And Nana, she knew, wasn't wrong. But with Logan, well, that was the thing. She had no idea what he wanted from her. She knew he found her attractive and he seemed to enjoy her company. But after that, she had absolutely no idea what his intentions might be, since he seemed to enjoy Ben's company as well. In a way, she thought, he treated her like a number of the married men she knew. You're pretty, and you're interesting, but I'm already taken. It occurred to her, though, that maybe he was taken. Maybe he had a girlfriend back in Colorado, or maybe he'd just broken up with the love of his life and was still getting over it. Thinking back, she realized that even though he'd described the things he'd seen and done on his journey across the country, she still had no idea why he'd gone on the walk in the first place, or why he'd decided to end his trek in Hampton. His history wasn't so much mysterious as hidden, which was strange. If she'd learned one thing about men, it was that they liked to talk about themselves, their jobs, their hobbies, past accomplishments, their motivations. Logan did none of those things. Puzzling. She shook her head, thinking she was probably reading too much into it. It wasn't as if they'd gone out on a date, after all. It was more like a friendly get-together. 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 Tacos, chess, and conversation. A family event. She put on pajamas and picked up a magazine from her bedside table. She absently flipped through the pages before turning out the light. But when she closed her eyes, she kept visualizing the way the corners of his mouth would turn up slightly whenever she said something he had found humorous, or the way his eyebrows knit together when he concentrated on a task. For a long time, she tossed and turned, unable to sleep, wondering if maybe, just maybe, Logan was awake and thinking of her too. Chapter 13. Tebow. Tebow watched as Victor cast his line into the cool Minnesota water. It was a cloudless Saturday afternoon. The air was still, the lake mirroring the pristine skies. They had set out on the lake early, wanting to fish before it became crowded with jet skis and speedboats. It was their last day of vacation. Tomorrow, both were scheduled to fly out. For their final evening, they planned to eat at a local steakhouse they'd heard was the best in town. I think you'll be able to find this woman, Victor announced without preamble. Tebow was reeling in his own line. Who? The woman in the photo who brings you luck. Tebow squinted at his friend. What are you talking about? When you look for her, I think you'll be able to find her. Tebow inspected his hook carefully and cast again. I'm not going to look for her. So you say now, but you will. Tebow shook his head. No, I won't. And even if I wanted to, there's no way I could. You'll find a way. Victor sounded smug in his certainty. Tebow stared at his friend. Why are we even talking about this? Because, Victor pronounced, it's not over yet. Believe me, it's over. I know you think so, but it isn't. Tebow had learned long ago that once Victor started on a topic, he would continue to expound on it until he was satisfied he'd made his point. Because it wasn't the way Tebow wanted to spend their last day, he figured he might as well get it over with once and for all. Okay, he said, sighing. Why isn't it over? Victor shrugged. Because There is no balance.
No balance, Thibault repeated, his tone flat.
Yes, Victor said. Exactly. You see?
No. Victor groaned at Thibault's denseness.
Say someone comes to put a roof on your house. The man works hard, and at the end, he is paid. Only then is it over. But in this case, with the photograph, it is as if the roof has been put on, but the owner has not paid. Until payment is made, everything is out of balance.
Are you saying that I owe this woman something? Thibault's voice was skeptical.
Yes. The photo kept you safe and brought you luck. But until payment is made, it is not over.
Thibault reached for a soda in the cooler. He handed one to Victor. You do realize you sound insane. Victor accepted the can with a nod. To some, maybe. But eventually, you will look for her.
There is a greater purpose to all this. It is your destiny.
My destiny?
Yes.
What does that mean?
I don't know. But you will know when you get there.
Thibault stayed quiet, wishing Victor had never brought up the subject. In the silence, Victor studied his friend.
Maybe, he speculated, you're meant to be together.
I'm not in love with her, Victor.
No?
No, he said.
And yet,
Victor observed, you think about her often.
To this, Thibault said nothing, for there was nothing he could say.
On Saturday morning, Thibault arrived early and went straight to work at the kennels, feeding, cleaning, and training as usual. While he worked, Ben played with Zeus until Elizabeth called him inside to get ready to go. She waved from her spot on the porch, but even from a distance, he could see she was distracted. She had gone back inside by the time he took the dogs out. He usually walked them in groups of three, with Zeus trailing behind him. Away from the house, he would let the dogs off the leash, but they tended to follow behind him no matter what direction he headed. He liked to vary the route he took. The variety kept the dogs from wandering too far away. Like people, dogs got bored if they did the same thing every day. Usually the walks lasted about 30 minutes per group. After the third group, he noticed that Elizabeth's car was gone, and he assumed she'd gone to drop Ben off at his father's. He didn't like Ben's father, mostly because Ben and Elizabeth didn't. The guy sounded like a piece of work, but it wasn't his place to do much more than listen when she talked about him. He didn't know enough to offer any advice, and even if he did, she wasn't asking for any. In any event, it wasn't his business. But what was his business, then? Why was he here? Despite himself, his thoughts drifted back to his conversation with Victor, and he knew he was here because of what Victor had said to him that morning at the lake, and, of course, because of what happened later. He forced that memory away. He wasn't going to go there. Not again. Calling to the dogs, Thibault turned and made for the kennels. After putting the dogs away, he went to explore the storage shed. When he turned on the light in the shed, he stared at the walls and shelves in amazement. Elizabeth's grandfather didn't have just a few tools. The place resembled a cluttered hardware store. He wandered inside, scanning the racks and sorting through the snap-on tool cabinets and piles of items on the workbench. He eventually picked out a socket wrench set, a couple of adjustable and Allen wrenches, and a jack, and carried them out to the truck. As Elizabeth had promised, the keys were under the mat. Thibault drove down the driveway, heading for the auto supply store he vaguely remembered seeing near downtown. The parts were in stock, replacement pads, C-clamp, and some high-temp grease, and he was back at the house in less than half an hour. He put the jack in place and raised the car, then removed the first wheel. He retracted the piston with the C-clamp, removed the old pad, checked the rotors for damage, and reinstalled a new pad before replacing the wheel and repeating the process with the other wheels. He was finishing the third brake pad when he heard Elizabeth pull up, rolling to a stop next to the old truck. He glanced over his shoulder just as she got out, realizing she'd been gone for hours. "How's it going?" she asked.
Just about done.
Really?
She sounded amazed. It's just brake pads. It's not a big deal.
I'm sure that's the same thing a surgeon would say. It's just an appendix.
You want to learn? Tebow asked, staring up at her figure silhouetted against the sky.
How long does it take?
Not long, he shrugged. 10 minutes?
Really?
She repeated.
Okay. Just let me get the groceries inside.
Need help?
No, it's just a couple of bags.
He slipped the third wheel back on and finished tightening the lug nuts before moving to the final wheel. He loosened the nuts just as Elizabeth reached his side. When she squatted beside him, he could smell a hint of the coconut lotion she'd applied earlier that morning. First, you take the wheel off, he began, and methodically walked her through the process, making sure she understood each step. When he lowered the jack and started to collect the tools, she shook her head.
That seemed almost too easy. I think even I could do it.
Probably.
Then why do they charge so much?
I don't know. I'm in the wrong line of work, she said, rising and gathering her hair into a loose ponytail.
But thank you for taking care of it. I've wanted those fixed for a while now.
No problem. Are you hungry? I picked up some fresh turkey for sandwiches.
And some pickles.
That sounds delicious, he said. They had lunch on the back porch, overlooking the garden. Elizabeth still seemed distracted, but they chatted a little about what it was like to grow up in a small southern town, where everyone knew everything about everybody else. Some of the stories were amusing, but Tebow admitted that he preferred a more anonymous existence.
Why am I not surprised? She asked.
Afterward, Tebow went back to work while Elizabeth spent the afternoon cleaning the house. Unlike her grandfather, Tebow was able to pry open the off-pry office window that had been painted shut, though it turned out to be more difficult than fixing the brakes. Nor was it easy to open or close afterward, no matter how much sanding he did to smooth it. Then he painted the trim. After that, it was a normal work day. By the time he finished up his duties at the kennel, it was coming up on 5, and though he could have easily left for the day, he didn't. Instead, he began work on the files again, wanting to get a head start on what he knew would be a long day tomorrow. He settled in for the next couple of hours, making what he thought was headway. Who could tell, though? And didn't hear Elizabeth approach. Instead, he noticed Zeus get to his feet and start toward the door.
I'm surprised you're still here, she said from the doorway. I saw the light on and thought you'd forgotten to turn it off.
I wouldn't forget. She pointed to the stacks of files on the desk.
I can't tell you how glad I am that you're doing that.
Nana tried to talk me into organizing the files this summer, but I was extremely adept at putting her off.
Lucky me, he drawled. No, lucky me. I almost feel guilty about it.
I'd almost believe you, except for that smirk. Have you heard from Ben or Nana?
Both, she said. Nana's great, Ben is miserable.
Not that he said as much. I could hear it in his voice. I'm sorry, he said.
He's meaning it.
She offered a tense shrug before reaching for the door handle. She rotated it in both directions, seemingly interested in the mechanism. Finally, she let out a sigh.
Do you want to help me make some ice cream?
Excuse me? He set down the file he'd been labeling.
I love homemade ice cream. There's nothing better when it's hot, but it's no fun to make it if you can't share it with someone.
I don't know if I've ever had homemade ice cream.
Then you don't know what you're missing. You in?
Her childlike enthusiasm was contagious.
Yeah, okay, he agreed. That sounds fun. Let me run to the store and get what we need. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Wouldn't it be easier just to buy some ice cream? Her eyes shone with delight.
But it's not the same. You'll see. I'll be back in a few minutes, okay?
She was as good as her word. Tebow just had time to straighten up the desk and check on the dogs one last time before he heard her coming up the drive on her way back from the store. He met her as she was getting out of the car.
Would you mind bringing in the bag of crushed ice? She asked. It's in the back seat.
He followed her into the kitchen with the bag of ice, and she motioned to the freezer as she set a quart of half and half on the counter.
Would you mind getting down the ice cream maker? It's in the pantry, top shelf on the left.
Thibault emerged from the pantry with a crank-handled ice cream maker that looked to be at least 50 years old.
Is this the one?
Yeah, that's it.
Does it still work? He wondered aloud.
Perfectly. Amazing, isn't it? Nana got that as a gift for her wedding, but we still use it all the time. It makes delicious ice cream.
He brought it over to the counter and stood beside her. What can I do?
If you agree to crank, I'll do the mixing.
Fair enough, he said. She dug out an electric mixer and a bowl, along with a measuring cup. From the spice cabinet, she chose sugar, flour, and vanilla extract. She added 3 cups of sugar and a cup of flour to the bowl and mixed it by hand, then put the bowl on the mixer. Next, she beat in 3 eggs, all the half and half, and 3 teaspoons of vanilla extract before turning on the mixer. Finally, she splashed in a bit of milk and poured the entire mixture into the cream can, put the can in the ice cream maker, and surrounded it with crushed ice and rock salt.
We're ready,
she announced, handing it to him. She picked up the rest of the ice and the rock salt.
To the porch we go.
You have to make it on the porch, or it isn't the same.
Ah, he said.
She took a seat beside him on the porch steps, sitting fractionally closer than she had the day before. Wedging the can between his feet, Thibault began to rotate the crank, surprised at how easily it turned.
Thanks for doing this, she said. I really need the ice cream. It's been one of those days.
Yeah? She turned toward him, a sly smile playing on her lips.
You're very good at that.
What?
Saying, yeah, when someone makes a comment.
It's just enough to make someone keep talking without being too personal or prying.
Yeah?
She giggled.
Yeah,
she mimicked.
But most people would have said something like, what happened, or why?
All right. What happened? Why was it one of those days? She gave a disgusted snort.
Oh, it's just that Ben was really grumpy this morning while he was packing, and I ended up snapping at him to hurry up because he was taking so long. His dad usually doesn't like it when he's late, but today? Well, today it was as if he'd forgotten that Ben was even coming. I must have knocked on the door for a couple of minutes before he eventually opened it, and I could tell he'd just gotten out of bed. Had I known he was sleeping in, I wouldn't have been so hard on Ben, and I still feel guilty about it. And of course, as I'm pulling away, I see Ben already hauling out the garbage because dear old Dad was too lazy to do it. And then, of course, I spent the whole day cleaning, which wasn't so bad the first couple of hours, but by the end, I really needed ice cream.
Doesn't sound like a relaxing Saturday.
It wasn't, she muttered,
and he could tell she was debating whether to say more. There was something more, something else bothering her, and she drew a long breath before sighing.
It's my brother's birthday today, she said, the faintest tremor in her voice. That's where I went today, after dropping Ben off. I brought flowers to the cemetery.
Thibault felt a thickness in his throat as he remembered the photograph on the mantle. Though he'd suspected that her brother had been killed, it was the first time that either Nana or Elizabeth had confirmed it. He immediately understood why she hadn't wanted to be alone tonight.
I'm sorry, he said, meaning it. So am I, she said. You would have liked him. Everyone liked him.
I'm sure. She twisted her hands in her lap.
It slipped Nana's mind.
Of course, she remembered this afternoon and called to tell me how sorry she was that she couldn't be here. She was practically in tears, but I told her it was okay, that it wasn't a big deal.
It is a big deal. He was your brother, and you miss him.
A wistful smile flickered across her face, then faded away.
You remind me of him,
she offered, her voice soft.
Not so much in your appearance, but in your mannerisms. I noticed that the first time you walked in the office to apply for the job. It's like you two were stamped out of the same mold. I guess it's a marine thing, huh?
Maybe, he said. I've met all types.
I'll bet.
She paused, drawing her knees to her chest and wrapping her arms around them.
Did you like it, being in the Marines?
Sometimes.
But not all the time?
No.
Drake loved it. Loved everything about it, in fact.
Though she seemed mesmerized by the movement of the crank, Thibault could tell she was lost in her memories.
I remember when the invasion began. With Camp Lejeune less than an hour away, it was big news. I was scared for him, especially when I heard talk about chemical weapons and suicide stands. But do you want to know what he was worried about? Before the invasion, I mean?
What?
A picture. A dumb old photograph. Can you believe that?
The unexpected words made Thibault's heart suddenly hammer in his chest, but he forced himself to appear calm.
He took this picture of me when we first arrived at the fair that year, she said, going on. It was the last weekend we spent together before he joined, and after we made the usual rounds, we just kind of wandered off to be alone. I remember sitting with him near this giant pine tree and talking for hours as we watched the Ferris wheel. It was one of the big ones, all lit up, and we could hear kids oohing and aahing as it went round and round under this perfect summer sky. We talked about our mom and dad, and we wondered what they would have been like, or whether they'd have gray hair, or whether we would have stayed in Hampton or moved away. And I remember looking up at the sky. All of a sudden, this shooting star went by, and all I could think was that they were listening to us somehow.
She paused, lost in the memory before going on.
He had the picture laminated and kept it with him all through basic training. After he got to Iraq, he emailed me and told me that he'd lost it and asked if I could send him another one. It seemed kind of crazy to me, but I wasn't there and I didn't know what he was going through, so I said I'd send another one. But I didn't get around to sending it right away. Don't ask me why. It was like I had some sort of mental block against doing it. I mean, I'd put the disc into my purse, but every time I was near the drugstore, I'd just forget to get the photograph developed. And before I knew it, the invasion had started. I finally got around to sending it, but the letter was eventually returned to me unopened. Drake died in the first week of the invasion.
She stared at him over the tops of her knees.
5 days. That was how long he lasted. And I never got him the one thing he wanted from me. You know how that makes me feel?
Thibault felt sick to his stomach.
I don't know what to say. There's nothing you can say, she said. It's just one of those terrible, impossibly sad things. And now, today, I kept thinking that he's just slipping away. Nana didn't remember. Ben didn't remember. At least with Ben I can sort of understand it. He wasn't even 5 when Drake was killed, and you know how memories are at that age. Only a little bit sticks. But Drake was so good with him, because he actually enjoyed being around him.
She shrugged.
Kind of like you.
Thibault wished she hadn't said it. He didn't belong here.
I didn't want to hire you,
she continued, oblivious to Thibault's turmoil.
Did you know that?
Yes.
But not because you walked here from Colorado. That was part of it. But it was mainly because you'd been in the Marines.
He nodded, and in the silence she reached for the ice cream maker.
It probably needs some more ice, she said.
She opened the lid, added more ice, and then handed it back to him.
Why are you here?
She finally asked. Though he knew what she really meant, he pretended he didn't.
Because you asked me to stay. I mean, why are you in Hampton? and I want the truth this time.
He grasped for the right explanation. It seemed like a nice place, and so far it has been. He could tell by her expression that she knew there was more, and she waited. When he didn't add anything else, she frowned.
It has something to do with your time in Iraq, doesn't it?
His silence gave him away.
How long were you there?
She asked. He shifted in his seat, not wanting to talk about it, but knowing he had no choice.
Which time?
How many times did you go?
3. Did you see a lot of combat?
Yes.
But you made it out.
Yes. Her lips tightened, and she suddenly looked on the verge of tears.
Why you, and not my brother?
He turned the crank 4 times before answering with what he knew was a lie.
I don't know.
When Elizabeth got up to get bowls and spoons for the ice cream, Thibault fought the urge to call Zeus and simply leave right then, before he changed his mind and go back to Colorado. He couldn't stop thinking about the photograph in his pocket, the photograph that Drake had lost. Thibault had found it. Drake had died, and now he was here, in the home where Drake had been raised, spending time with the sister he'd left behind. On the surface, it was all so improbable, but as he fought the sudden dryness in his mouth, he concentrated on those things he knew to be true. The photograph was simply that, a picture of Elizabeth that her brother had taken. There were no such things as lucky charms. Thibault had survived his time in Iraq, but so had the vast majority of Marines who'd been posted there. So, in fact, had most of his platoon, including Victor. But some Marines had died, Drake among them. And though it was tragic, it had nothing to do with the photograph. It was war. As for him, he was here because he'd made a decision to search for the woman in the picture. It had nothing to do with destiny or magic. But he'd searched because of Victor. He blinked and reminded himself that he didn't believe anything Victor had told him. What Victor believed was just superstition. It couldn't be true. At least, not all of it. Zeus seemed to sense his struggle and lifted his head to stare. With his ears raised, he gave a soft whine and wandered up the stairs to lick Thibault's hand. Thibault raised Zeus's head, and the dog nuzzled his face.
What am I doing here? Thibault whispered. Why did I come?
As he waited for an answer that would never come, he heard the screen door slam behind him.
Are you talking to yourself or to your dog?
Elizabeth asked.
Both, he said.
She sat next to him and handed him his spoon.
What were you saying?
Nothing important, he said. He motioned for Zeus to lie down, and the dog squished himself onto the step in an attempt to remain close to both of them. Elizabeth opened the ice cream maker and scooped some ice cream into each of the bowls.
I hope you like it, she said, handing him a bowl.
She dipped her spoon in and had a taste before turning toward him, her expression earnest.
I want to apologize, she said.
For what?
For what I said before, when I asked why you made it and my brother didn't.
It's a fair question, he nodded, uncomfortable under her scrutiny.
No, it isn't, she said, and it was wrong to ask you, so I'm sorry.
It's okay, he said. She ate another spoonful, hesitating before going on.
Do you remember when I told you that I didn't want to hire you because you were in the Marines?
He nodded.
It's not what you probably think. It wasn't because you reminded me of Drake. It's because of the way Drake died.
She tapped her spoon against the bowl.
Drake was killed by friendly fire.
Thibault turned away as she went on.
Of course, I didn't know that at first. We kept getting the runaround. The investigation is continuing, or we're looking into the matter, things like that. It took months to find out how he was killed, and even then, we never really learned who was responsible.
She groped for the right words.
It just didn't seem right, you know. I mean, I know it was an accident. I know whoever did it didn't mean to kill him. But if something like that happened here in the States, someone would be charged with manslaughter. But if it happens in Iraq, no one wants the truth to come out, and it never will.
Why are you telling me this? Tebow said, his voice quiet.
Because, she said, that's the real reason I didn't want to hire you. After I found out what happened, it seemed like every time I saw a Marine, I'd be asking myself, was he the one who killed Drake? Or is he covering up for someone who killed him? I knew it wasn't fair. I knew it was wrong, but I couldn't help it. And after a while, the anger I felt just sort of became part of me, like it was the only way I knew how to handle the grief. I didn't like who I'd become, but I was stuck in this horrible cycle of questions and blame. And then, out of the blue, you walked into the office and applied for a job. And Nana, even though she knew exactly how I was feeling, maybe because of the way I was feeling, decided to hire you.
She set her bowl aside.
That's why I didn't have much to say to you the first couple of weeks. I didn't know what I could say. I figured I wouldn't have to say anything, since more than likely you'd quit within a few days like everyone else. But you didn't. Instead, you work hard and stay late. You're wonderful to Nana and my son. And all of a sudden, you're not so much a Marine as you are just a man.
She paused as if lost in thought, then finally nudged him with her knee.
And not only that, you're a man who allows emotional women to ramble on without telling them to stop.
He nudged her back to show her it was okay. It's Drake's birthday.
Yes, it is.
She raised her bowl.
To my little brother, Drake, she said.
Tebow tapped his bowl against hers. To Drake, he echoed. Zeus whined and stared up at them anxiously. Despite the tension, she reached out and ruffled his fur.
You don't need a toast. This is Drake's moment.
He tilted his head in puzzlement, and she laughed.
Blah, blah, blah. He doesn't understand a word I'm saying.
True, but he can tell you were upset. That's why he stayed close.
He's really amazing. I don't think I've ever seen a dog so intuitive and well-trained. Nana said the same thing, and believe me, that's saying a lot.
Thanks, he said. Good bloodlines.
Okay, she said. Your turn to talk.
You pretty much know everything there is to know about me. What do you want to know? She picked up her bowl and spooned more ice cream into her mouth before asking,
Have you ever been in love?
When he raised his eyebrows at the nonchalant way she'd said it, she waved him off.
Don't even think I'm being too personal. Not after everything I've told you.
Fess up. Once, he admitted.
Recently?
No, years ago, when I was in college.
What was she like?
He seemed to search for the right word. Earthy, he offered. She said nothing, but her expression told him she wanted more. Okay, he continued. She was a women's studies major, and she favored Birkenstocks and peasant skirts. She despised makeup. She wrote opinions for the student newspaper and championed the causes of pretty much every sociological group in the world except white males and the rich. Oh, and she was a vegetarian, too. She studied him.
For some reason, I can't see you with someone like that.
Neither could I, and neither could she. Not in the long run, anyway. But for a while, it was surprisingly easy to overlook our obvious differences, and we did.
How long did it last?
A little more than a year.
Do you ever hear from her anymore?
He shook his head. Never.
And that's it?
Aside from a couple of high school crushes, that's it. But bear in mind that the last 5 years haven't exactly been conducive to starting new relationships.
No, I don't suppose so.
Zeus got up and stared down the drive, his ears twitching, alert. It took a moment, but Thibault heard the faint sound of a car engine, and in the distance, a broad, dispersed light flashed in the trees before it began to narrow. Someone pulling up the drive. Elizabeth frowned in confusion before a sedan slowly rounded the corner and came toward the house. Even though the lights from the porch didn't illuminate the drive, Thibault recognized the car and sat up straighter. It was either the sheriff or one of his deputies. Elizabeth recognized it as well.
"This can't be good," she muttered.
"What do you think they want?" She stood from her spot on the porch.
"It's not a they. It's a him, my ex-husband."
She started down the steps and motioned toward him.
"Just wait here. I'll handle this."
Thibault motioned for Zeus to sit and stay as the car pulled to a stop beside Elizabeth's car at the far end of the house. Through the bushes, he saw the passenger door open and watched as Ben got out, dragging his backpack behind him. He started toward his mother, keeping his head down. When the driver's side door opened, Deputy Keith Clayton stepped out. Zeus let out a low growl, alert and ready, waiting for Thibault's command to go after the guy. Elizabeth glanced at Zeus in surprise until Ben stepped into the light. Thibault noticed the absence of Ben's glasses and the black and blue bruises around Ben's eye at the same moment Elizabeth did.
"What happened?"
she cried, hurrying toward her son. She squatted to get a better look.
"What did you do?"
"It's nothing," Clayton responded, approaching them. "It's just a bruise." Ben turned away, not wanting her to see.
"What about his glasses?"
Elizabeth said, still trying to make sense of it.
"Did you hit him?"
"No, I didn't hit him. Christ, I wouldn't hit him. Who do you think I am?" Elizabeth didn't seem to hear him and focused her attention on her son.
"Are you all right? Oh, that looks bad. What happened, sweetie? Are your glasses broken?"
She knew he wouldn't say anything until after Clayton left. Tilting his face up to hers, she could see the vessels had burst in his eye, leaving it bloody.
"How hard did you throw it?"
she demanded, her expression horrified. "Not too hard, and it's just a bruise. His eye is fine, and we managed to tape his glasses back together."
"It's more than a bruise."
Elizabeth's voice rose, barely controlled. "Stop acting like this is my fault," Clayton barked.
"It is your fault."
"He's the one who missed it. We were just playing catch. It was an accident, for God's sake, wasn't it, Ben? We were having fun, right?" Ben stared at the ground.
"Yeah,"
he mumbled. "Tell her what happened. Tell her it wasn't my fault. Go ahead." Ben shifted from one foot to the other.
"We were playing catch. I missed the ball, and it hit me in the eye."
He held up his glasses, crudely taped at the bridge, and the top of one lens with duct tape.
"Dad fixed my glasses."
Clayton held up his palms. "See? No big deal. Happens all the time. It's part of the game."
"When did this happen?"
Elizabeth demanded. "A few hours ago."
"And you didn't call me?"
"No. I took him to the emergency room."
"The emergency room?"
"Where else was I supposed to take him? I knew I couldn't bring him back here without having him checked out, so I did. I did what any responsible parent would do, just like you did when he fell off the swing and broke his arm. And if you remember, I didn't get all crazy on you, just like I don't get crazy about you letting him play in a treehouse. The thing is a death trap." She seemed too shocked to speak, and he shook his head in disgust. Anyway, he wanted to go home.
"Okay,"
she said, still struggling with her words. A muscle clenched and unclenched in her jaw. She waved Clayton off.
"Whatever. Just go. I'll take it from here."
With her arm around Ben, she started to lead him away. And it was in that instant that Clayton spotted Thibault sitting on the porch, staring directly at him. Clayton's eyes widened before they flashed in anger. He started for the porch. "What are you doing here?" he demanded. Thibault simply stared at him without moving. Zeus's growls grew more ominous. "What's he doing here, Beth?"
"Just go, Keith. We'll talk about this tomorrow."
She turned away.
"Don't walk away from me,"
He spat, reaching for her arm. I'm just asking you a question.
At that moment, Zeus snarled and his rear legs began to quiver. For the first time, Clayton seemed to notice the dog, his teeth bared, the fur on his back standing straight up.
If I were you, I'd let go of her arm, Tebow said. His voice was flat and calm, more a suggestion than an order. Right now.
Clayton, eyeing the dog, let go immediately.
As Elizabeth and Ben hurried to the porch, Clayton glared at Tebow. Zeus took a single step forward, continuing to snarl.
I think you'd better go, Tebow said, his voice quiet.
Clayton debated for an instant, then took a step backward and turned away. Tebow heard him cursing under his breath as he stalked back to the car, opened the door, and slammed it shut behind him. Tebow reached out to pet Zeus.
Good boy, he whispered.
Clayton backed out of his spot, made a sloppy three-point turn, and took off up the drive, spewing gravel. His taillights receded from view, and only then did the fur on Zeus's back finally lower. His tail wagged as Ben approached.
Hi, Zeus, Ben said.
Zeus glanced at Tebow for permission.
It's okay, Tebow said, releasing him.
Zeus pranced toward Ben as if to say, I'm so happy you're home. He nosed at Ben, who started to pet him.
You missed me, huh?
Ben said, sounding pleased.
I missed you, too.
Come on, sweetie, Elizabeth urged, moving him forward again. Let's go inside and put some ice on your eye, and I want to see it in the light.
As they opened the screen door, Tebow stood.
Hey, Tebow,
Ben said, waving.
Hi, Ben.
Can I play with Zeus tomorrow?
If it's okay with your mom, it's okay with me.
Tebow could tell by looking at Elizabeth that she wanted to be alone with her son.
I should probably go, he said, rising from his spot. It's getting late, and I've got an early morning.
Thanks, she said. I appreciate it, and sorry for all this.
There's nothing to be sorry for.
He walked a ways down the drive. Then he turned toward the house. He could just make out movement behind the curtains of the living room window. Staring at the shadows of the two figures in the window, he felt for the first time that he was finally beginning to understand the reason he'd come.
Chapter 14. Clayton.
Of all the places in all the world, he had to find the guy at Beth's place. What were the odds on that? Pretty damn small, that's for sure. He hated that guy. No, scratch that. He wanted to destroy the guy. Not only because of the whole stealing the camera and flattening his tires thing, though that was definitely worthy of a little time locked in a jail alongside a couple of violent methamphetamine addicts. And it wasn't because Thibault had him over a barrel with the camera disc. It was because the guy, the same guy who'd played him once, had made him look like a quivering jellyfish in front of Beth.
If I were you, I'd let go of her arm. Had been bad enough. But after that, oh, that's where the guy went seriously wrong.
Right now, I think you'd better go. All spoken in that serious, steady, don't piss me off tone of voice that Clayton himself used on criminals. And he'd actually done it. Slinking away like some stray dog with his tail between his legs, which made the whole thing worse. Normally, he wouldn't have put up with that for a second, even with Beth and Ben around. No one gave him orders and got away with it, and he would have made it perfectly clear that the guy had just made the biggest mistake of his life. But he couldn't. That was the thing. He couldn't. Not with Cujo around, eyeballing his crotch like it was an appetizer at the Sunday buffet. In the dark, the thing actually looked like a rabid wolf, and all he could do was remember the stories Kenny Moore told him about Panther. What the hell was he doing with Beth, anyway? How did that come about? It was like some sort of evil cosmic plan to ruin what had been, for the most part, a pretty crappy day, starting with mopey, moody Ben showing up at noon and complaining straight off about having to take out the garbage. He was a patient guy. But he was tired of the kid's attitude. Real tired of it.
which is why he hadn't let Ben stop at just the garbage. He'd had the kid clean the kitchen and the bathrooms, too, thinking it would show him how the real world worked, where having a halfway decent attitude actually mattered, power of positive thinking and all that. And besides, everyone knew that while mamas did the spoiling, dads were supposed to teach kids that nothing in life was free, right? And the kid did real well with the cleaning, like he always did. So, for Clayton, the whole thing was over and done with. It was time for a break, so he took Ben outside to play catch. What kid wouldn't want to play catch with his dad on a beautiful Saturday afternoon? Ben, that's who.
I'm tired. It's really hot, Dad. Do we have to?
One stupid complaint after the other until they finally get outside, and then the kid shuts up tighter than a clam and won't say a thing. Worse, no matter how many times Clayton told him to watch the damn ball, the kid kept missing it because he wasn't even trying. Doing it on purpose, no doubt. But would he run to the ball after he missed it? Of course not, not his kid. His kid is too busy sulking about the unfairness of it all while playing catch like a blind man. In the end, it pissed him off. He was trying to have a good time with his son, but his son was working against him. And yeah, okay, maybe he did throw the ball a little hard that last time. But what happened next wasn't his fault. If the kid had been paying attention, the ball wouldn't have ricocheted off his glove, and Ben wouldn't have ended up screaming like a baby, like he was dying or something. Like he was the only kid in the history of the world to get a shiner playing ball. But that was all beside the point. The kid got hurt. It wasn't serious, and the bruises would be gone in a couple of weeks. In a year, Ben would either forget it completely or brag to his friends about the time he got a shiner playing ball. Beth, on the other hand, would never forget. She'd carry that grudge around inside her for a long, long time, even if it had been more Ben's fault than his. She didn't understand the simple fact that all boys remember their sports injuries with pride. He'd known Beth would overreact tonight, but he didn't necessarily blame her for it. That's what mothers did. And Clayton had been prepared for that. He thought he'd handled the whole thing pretty well, right up until the end, when he'd seen the guy with the dog sitting on the porch like he owned the place. Logan Thibault. He remembered the name right off, of course. He searched for the guy for a few days without luck, and had pretty much put it behind him, when he figured the guy had left town. No way some dude and his dog couldn't be noticed, right? Which was why he'd eventually stopped asking folks whether they'd seen him. Stupid. But what to do now? What was he going to do about this new turn of events? He'd deal with Logan Thibault, that much was certain, and he wasn't about to be caught off guard again. Which meant that before he did anything, he needed information. Where the guy lived, where the guy worked, where he liked to hang out, where he could find the guy alone. Harder than it sounded, especially with the dog. He had the funny feeling Thibault and the dog were seldom, if ever, separated. But he'd figure out what to do about that, too. Obviously, he needed to know what was going on with Beth and Thibault. He hadn't heard about her seeing anyone since Adam the Dork. It was hard to believe that Beth could be seeing Thibault, considering the fact that he always heard what Beth was up to. Frankly, he couldn't imagine what she'd see in someone like Thibault in the first place. She'd gone to college. The last thing she wanted in her life was some drifter who rolled into town. The guy didn't even have a car. But Thibault had been with her on a Saturday night, and that obviously counted for something. Somewhere, something didn't make sense. He pondered it, wondering if the guy worked there. Either way, he'd figure it out. And when he did, he'd deal with it. And Mr. Logan Thibault would find himself hating the day he'd ever showed up in Clayton's town. Chapter 15. Beth. Sunday was the hottest day of the summer yet, with high humidity and temperatures in the triple digits. Lakes had begun to go dry in the Piedmont. The citizens of Raleigh were rationing their water, and in the eastern part of the state, crops had begun to wither under the never-ending heat. In the past 3 weeks, The forests had become a tinderbox, waiting to be ignited by a carelessly tossed cigarette or bolt of lightning, both of which seemed inevitable. The only question was when and where exactly the fire would start. Unless they were in their kennels, the dogs were miserable, and even Logan had been feeling the effects of the heat. He shortened the training sessions by 5 minutes each, and when he walked the dogs, his destination was always the creek, where they could wade into the water and cool off. Zeus had been in and out of the water at least a dozen times, and though Ben tried to start a game of fetch as soon as he got back from church, Zeus showed only half-hearted interest. Instead, Ben set up a floor fan on the front porch of the house, angling the breeze toward Zeus, and sat beside the dog while he read The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, one of the few books by Agatha Christie that he had yet to finish. He stopped briefly to visit with Logan in a desultory fashion before going back to his book. It was the kind of lazy Sunday afternoon Beth typically enjoyed, except that every time she saw the bruise on Ben's face and his crudely repaired glasses, she felt a flash of anger at what Keith had done. She'd have to take Ben to the optician on Monday to get his glasses repaired. Despite what he'd said, Keith had thrown the ball way too hard, and she wondered what kind of a father would do that to a 10-year-old. The Keith Clayton kind, obviously. It was one thing to have made a mistake by marrying him. It was another thing to have made that mistake endlessly compounded for the rest of her life. Ben's relationship with his father seemed to be getting worse, not better. Granted, Ben needed an adult male figure in his life, and Keith was his father, but she shook her head. Part of her wanted to take Ben and simply move away, relocate to another part of the country and start over. It was easy to fantasize that if she simply had the guts to do it, her troubles would be over. But that wasn't reality. She had the guts. It was everything else that made the scenario impossible. Even if Nana was healthy enough to handle things on her own, and she wasn't, Keith would find her no matter where she went. Gramps would insist on it, and the courts, including Judge Clayton, would intervene. Most likely, in her absence, Keith would be awarded sole custody. Keith's uncle would make sure of it. That had been the implied threat since the divorce, a threat she had to take seriously in this county. Maybe she would have a shot on appeal, but how long would that take? 12 months? 18 months? She wasn't going to risk losing Ben for even that long, and the last thing she wanted was for Ben to have to spend even more time with Keith. The truth was, Keith didn't want full custody any more than she wanted him to have it, and over the years they'd worked out an unspoken solution. Keith would have Ben as infrequently as possible, but enough to keep Gramps happy. It wasn't fair for either of them to use Ben like a pawn, but what else could she do? She didn't want to risk losing him. Keith would do what he had to keep the money flowing, and Gramps wanted Ben around. People like to imagine they were free to choose their own lives, but Beth had learned that choice was sometimes illusory. At least in Hampton, anyway, where the Claytons pretty much ran everything. Gramps was always polite when they bumped into him at the church, and though he'd wanted to buy Nana's land for years, he hadn't made things difficult for them. So far. But in the world of black and white, there was no question that the Clayton family, Gramps included, were masters of the gray, and they used their power when it suited them. Each and every one of them had grown up with the idea that they were special, anointed even, which was why she'd been surprised at how easily Keith had left her house last night. She was glad that Logan and Zeus had been there. Logan had handled the situation perfectly, and she appreciated the fact that he hadn't hung around afterward. He'd known she wanted to be alone with Ben, and had accepted that as easily as he'd dismissed Keith. In all things, Logan was calm and steadfast, she reflected. When she talked about Drake, he didn't turn the conversation to himself or how it made him feel, nor did he offer advice. It was one of the reasons she trusted him, and had ended up telling him so much about herself. She'd been a little out of sorts because of Drake's birthday, but in truth, she had known exactly what she was doing. She'd been the one to ask him to stay in the first place, and she supposed that deep down, she'd wanted to share those parts of herself with him.
Hey, Mom?
Beth turned toward Ben. His eyes still looked terrible, but she pretended she didn't notice. What's up, sweetie?
Do we have any garbage bags and straws?
Of course we do. Why?
Thibault said he'd show me how to make a kite and that we could fly it when it was done.
That sounds like fun.
He said he used to make them when he was a kid and that they fly great.
She smiled. Is that all you need? Garbage bags and straws?
I already found the fishing line and the duct tape. They were in Grandpa's garage.
From across the yard, she saw Logan heading toward them. Ben noticed him at the same time.
Hey, Thibault, he shouted. Are you ready to build the kite?
I was coming to ask if you were ready, Logan called back.
Almost. I just have to get the straws and the garbage bags.
Logan waved an acknowledgement. As he drew nearer, Beth noted the shape of his shoulders, the tight cinch of his waist. It wasn't the first time she'd noticed his body, but today it felt almost as if she were staring. She turned away, laying a hand on Ben's shoulder, feeling suddenly ridiculous. The garbage bags are under the sink, and the straws are in the pantry by the cookies. Do you want to get them, or should I?
I'll get them, he said.
Then to Logan,
I'll be back in a second.
Logan reached the steps just as Ben disappeared inside. Making a kite? She asked, both surprised and impressed. He said he was bored. Do you really know how? It's not as hard as it sounds. You want to help us?
No,
she said. Up close, she noticed the way his sweat made the T-shirt cling to his chest, and she quickly averted her gaze.
I'll let you two do that. It's more of a guy project. But I'll bring the lemonade, and afterwards, if you're hungry, you're welcome to stay.
Nothing fancy. Ben was in the mood for some hot dogs and macaroni and cheese. Logan nodded. I'd like that. Ben came back out the door, bags in one hand and straws in the other. His face, despite the bruises and cockeyed glasses, was animated.
Got him, he said. You ready?
Logan continued to hold Beth's gaze longer than necessary, and Beth felt her neck flush before she turned away. Logan smiled at Ben. Whenever you are. Beth found herself studying Logan as he worked on the kite with Ben. They were sitting at the picnic table near the large oak tree with Zeus at their feet, and the wind would occasionally carry the sound of their voices, Logan telling Ben what to do next, or Ben asking if something had been done correctly. It was clear they were enjoying their little project. Ben was chattering away, making the occasional mistake, which Logan would then patiently correct with extra tape. How long had it been since she had blushed when a man stared at her? She wondered how much of her newfound self-consciousness had to do with the fact that Nana was away. For the last couple of nights, it had almost felt like she was really on her own for the first time in her life. After all, she'd moved from Nana's home to Keith's and back to Nana's, and had been there ever since. And although she enjoyed Nana's company and liked the stability, it wasn't exactly how she'd imagined her adult life would turn out. She'd once dreamed of having her own place, but the timing had never seemed right. After Keith, she'd needed Nana's help with Ben. When Ben was old enough, both her brother and her grandfather had died, and Beth had needed Nana's support as much as Nana needed Beth's. And then, just when she was thinking she was finally ready to find a home of her own, Nana had a stroke, and there wasn't a chance she was going to leave the woman who'd raised her. But in this moment, she had an unexpected picture of what her life would have been like under a different set of circumstances. Now, as the starlings above her moved from tree to tree, she sat on the porch of an otherwise empty house, witnessing the kind of scene that made her believe that all could be right with the world. Even from a distance, she could see Ben concentrating while Logan showed him how to put the final touches on the kite. Every now and then, Logan would lean forward and offer direction, his demeanor patient and steady, but he let Ben have most of the fun. That he seemed to be simply working on the project, rectifying Ben's mistakes without frustration or anger, made her feel a burst of gratitude and affection toward him. She was still marveling at the novelty of it all when she saw them move to the center of the yard. Logan held the kite above his head, and Ben unwound the fishing line. As Ben started to run, Logan followed, allowing the kite to catch the wind before letting go. Logan stopped and gazed skyward as the kite began to soar above them, and when he clapped his hands at Ben's obvious joy, she was struck by the simple truth that sometimes the most ordinary things could be made extraordinary simply by doing them with the right people. Nana called that night to say that she needed to be picked up the following Friday, and in her absence, Logan joined Beth and Ben for dinner every night. Most of the time, Ben was the one who pleaded with Logan to stay, but by Wednesday, it had become obvious to Beth that Logan was not only pleased to spend time with them, but more than happy to let Ben continue to orchestrate things. Perhaps, she found herself wondering occasionally, Logan was as inexperienced at intimacy as she was. After dinner, they usually went for a walk. Ben and Zeus would race ahead on the path that led to the creek, while she and Logan followed. Once they headed toward town to visit the banks of the South River, where they sat beneath the bridge that spanned it. Sometimes they talked around the edges of things, whether anything interesting had happened at work, or Logan's progress in reorganizing the files. At other times, it seemed he was content to walk beside her without saying much. Because Logan was so comfortable with silence, she felt surprisingly comfortable as well. But something was happening between them, and she knew it. She was drawn to him. At school, with her class of second graders milling around her, she'd occasionally find herself wondering what he was doing at that very minute. She gradually acknowledged that she looked forward to coming home because it meant that she would see him. On Thursday evening, they all piled into Nana's truck and drove into town for pizza. Zeus rode in the truck bed, head hanging over the side and his ears blown back. Odd as it seemed, Beth had the strange feeling that this was almost a date, albeit one with a 10-year-old chaperone. Tony's Pizza was located on one of the quiet cross streets downtown, sandwiched between an antique store and a law firm. With scuffed brick floors, picnic tables, and paneled walls, the place had a cozy familiarity, partly because Tony hadn't updated the decor since Beth was a little girl. In the rear of the restaurant, the video games Tony offered dated from the early 1980s, Ms. Pac-Man, Millipede, and Asteroids. The games were as popular now as they'd been back then, probably owing to the lack of any video arcades in town. Beth loved this place. Tony and his wife, Maria, both in their 60s, not only worked 7 days a week, but lived in an apartment above the restaurant. With no children of their own, they were surrogate parents to pretty much every teenager in town, and they embraced everyone with a kind of unconditional acceptance that kept the place packed. Tonight it was crowded with the usual mix of people, families with children, a couple of men who were dressed like they'd just finished work at the law office next door, a few elderly couples, and clusters of teenagers here and there. Maria beamed when she saw Beth and Ben enter. She was short and round, with dark hair and a genuinely warm smile. She walked toward them, reaching for menus on the way. "Hello, Beth. Hello, Ben." As she passed the kitchen, she ducked her head in for an instant. "Tony, come out here. Beth and Ben are here." It was something she did every time Beth visited, and though Beth was sure she welcomed everyone with equal warmth, it still made her feel special.